Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, Monday evening. And of course, Edwin is with me for another rant. Hello, Edwin. How are you doing?
Doing a lot better, Martin. I can eat.
Eureka. You need to explain that for people.
I'm no longer on a weight loss program, a forced weight loss program with root canal and cracked molars and the like. Oh. It's all the tension. Yeah, then next thing, I think I need to get some sort of a mouth guard so I won't be biting so hard when I'm asleep.
Yeah, when the teeth start going wrong, it's a real problem. Of course, the winners are the dentists, right?
Oh yeah, the winners are the dentists. I mean, it's not cheap. And look, it is, and it's rather. It's made me think a lot over the last few weeks where the real costs have started to come out, but. If somebody like myself, let's say in my position, looks at the costs of all this, how many people are out there that are basically not getting any treatment done to the teeth and bearing the pain? I mean, it's excruciating pain, and I'm sure there's not only tens but also hundreds, if not thousands, of people in a similar position to what I am, but. Thank God, thank my lucky stars, I'm in a position where I can get it treated, where there's a lot of people there and things are just not getting any better, as we keep on saying. A lot of people are asset rich they're sitting on homes that are unencumbered, but they're cash poor. The pensions, the retirement funds are not covering, barely covering the bills, let alone to get special treatment done and all sorts of other parts of the body and also to fix the homes as well.
Yeah, there is some really quite disturbing news coming through. I don't know whether you saw the food banks made a comment that there are thousands and thousands of people now who are not actually eating sufficient to be able to actually nourish themselves because they can't afford to. And in my surveys, if you ask people, what do they prioritize? They prioritize paying the rent or paying the mortgage, but they're giving up on medical treatment, dental treatment, spending less on nourishing food. I mean, this is a chapter now of horrific stories about how people are struggling to get by. Plus, of course, the other little trick, which is you now work even more hours and then have a side hustle to try and generate a few more dollars to be able to cover the increased costs. The costs of living are dramatically higher. And as you say, many people are finding it being, they're under pressure now, being squeezed. And then if you get a one-off problem like a major dental issue or, major car repairs, that's enough to, create huge, huge pressures for many people. And the trouble is, this isn't going to get changed anytime soon. This is just the start of this grind. I did a show over the weekend talking about the slow tightening that we're seeing here, and a lot of people are now in the noose, and it's not a matter of how long before something more serious happens. It's not a pretty sight.
No, it's not. And I guess another thing that, from my observations of driving around most of the weeks, every day, just driving around looking at properties, looking in different suburbs, it's I'm starting to see more and more garage sale signs popping up everywhere. That for me, that's just a sign of how the people are faring as well. One of the many signs. I've also, one of the other things that I've noticed for many years, and I used to share a lot of this with Cookie Boy, was the used cars on the side of the road. There were certain parts of particular suburbs, different suburbs. There's certain areas where there's a lot. It's like a parking lot. It's like a car yard. They're like an unofficial car yards, and they were very sparsely, occupied before, but now it seems like people can't get a spot in there as well. So yeah, there's a lot of A lot of things are going, Martin. And one of the predictions that I did put out, Dustin, I put out at the beginning of the year was that we said that used car sales were going to drop by 40-50% in terms of pricing. So I think that's where we are headed. And it's certainly not just that, but there's a lot of other things that are sitting around at home that people are not using or don't care to use, or they could make do without. And they're just basically selling just to get a meal, which is a shameful state that we're in. But our illustrious leaders are going over to America to talk about the $360 billion submarine deal of some sort that was originally going to cost us $90 billion, but we didn't want to dance with the French. We wanted to dance with the Yankees, and they're just taking us for a ride. In the meantime, there's a lot of pain here. But that's poking the bear, Martin. Last week they poked the bear, and this week looks like the kook's been poked as well.
Yeah, so it's very interesting, isn't it, that more and more people are now coming out and talking more openly about questioning the high migration. In fact, I get a show about migration over the weekend as well, because we've got 500,000 people in the country, and I basically made the point that to my mind there's a really stark choice now. Either we turn the migration knob down, which is of course something which the current government would probably resist, but they shouldn't resist, or the alternative is you continue with very high migration, which means more pressure on housing, and that will then lead to more price rises, probably less housing affordability. We can't build enough for the number that we're coming in. And in fact, wherever you look, Shane at AMP made the point that we need 200,000, not 500,000, just to sort of fit within the current build profile that we've got. And so I think this is becoming a really live issue. But you and I called this more than a year ago. We said the fix was in, and the fix was high migration. So people need to understand this was a strategy that was deliberate. This wasn't just happenstance. This was a deliberate strategy.
Look, definitely. Now the banks, some of the reports from the banks that are coming out are saying that, well, look, is it really a bad thing? It's a good thing, right? Because now there's more equity in the homes that people have got. There's more equity, so they'll draw down on that equity. And guess what, Martin? Spend. So, the retailers are going to be happy. And I guess the restaurateurs and the hospitality industry are going to be happy, or maybe not. Maybe the extra dollars that people will see in the equity of the homes will go to other areas of greater need, or help others within the family. But who knows what we're going to do. But look, with all the shit and everything that's been coming out over the last couple of weeks, and the many lies that we've been told, I put out a tweet, and this is my poke at the government as well. I said, put out a tweet asking, Siri, which band wrote the song "Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet Little Lies"? And I put it out there to the Twitterati or to the X's and the Kryptonians to see if we could figure out. Is it the band known as Domain and the Auctioneers, or is it Don't Mince Your Words, or is it the Pretenders, Albo and Co? But there's a lot of that going around. I've still yet to find out who wrote the song "Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet Little Lies." I kind of think it's number three personally. But what do you think, Martin?
Well, maybe they all have the same agenda, right? And it is worth just recalling, $90 billion was pulled out in equity. In other words, equity mate over the last little while, right? So that's a big, big number. So you're right. As house prices go up, that means that people can pull out more equity. Also, of course, the banks can allow people then to pull out more equity to be able to pay the mortgage for the next year or two. So that protects the banks. It protects the spending momentum in that section of the economy. But elsewhere, if you look, we had things like, the Snowy Hydro 2 has now gone way over budget. They've got a machine stuck out of the ground for the last year, and it's now costing a huge amount. And they're now saying it's going to be a massive budget blowout. So, I mean, wherever you look, it's crazy. And the only lever is to try and get house prices to go on going higher, because that then creates the momentum. But no, for me, the government has to take prime responsibility for this now. The fact is that their levers, they've pulled the levers a particular way for a particular set of outcomes, which are actually working against the interests of most Australians.
Yeah, it does. And you look at the levers that they're pulling and that benefit them, as you say, it's going to be obviously the migration is going to stay for a while, regardless of whether the coup calls is starting to call it otherwise. And you know, he's a very very staunch Labor supporter, and whatever they do, I think his voice is going to count anyway. We need the home prices to go up, as the banks are now saying, so that people can spend. Obviously, the way to do it is immigration's just got to go up. Very little construction happening. There's a lot of areas, a lot of builders in. You know, first and second tier builders are, you know, as we pointed out months ago, that are you know, pretty much trading insolvent, and many are hitting the wall. So it's really a wait and see moment as to you know, which other ways they can continue to increase the value of homes. I mean, this is and I've still got to bring it to attention, because obviously another geopolitical scenario that's playing out is still the Middle East war. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm still of the opinion that we're going to start to see listing numbers pull back, because many turtles are going to pull their head back in the shell and take cover and wait until 2024, until things cool down. That's my personal call from my observations. We're going to keep a very, very close look at numbers on market. But as you say, Martin, the governments have got no money. There was another report that I read earlier on that was saying something along the lines that the state government's going to have to look for billions of dollars in order to put in stations along the new rail links from Parramatta into different parts of Sydney. I mean, this is, and yet many state governments are going broke. So it's tread lightly. So, but let's keep doing what we were doing in the past, and hopefully that tomorrow will be different. Is the current government policy, both in state and federal, right? The only ones that are making money, the only governments are the LGAs. the local governments, they're making a mutter with all the levies and going up, the council contributions going up. Is it any wonder that a lot of them around Sydney are giving themselves huge pay rises, because the little bunnies just work so hard?
Well, maybe the paper bags are getting bigger. I don't know. Now, let's move on and talk just briefly about some of the local WeChat chats. And somebody asked me the other day, who are these WeChat chatters? You should just explain just a little bit. This is basically a particular corner of social media, right, with a particular angle to it, which you're monitoring.
Yeah, well, I wish I could monitor it. It's basically, I'll get the information from our team. Members of our team can speak both Mandarin and Cantonese. Some can speak both Mandarin and Cantonese. Now, there's a platform, a Chinese platform called WeChat, and on this Chinese platform, there's they form groups of up to 500 people maximum, and you've got to be invited. It's by invitation only when you put together a group, and they form groups. So basically, as I call them, Dusty and Evan, they monitor on average about 6 to 8 local WeChat groups. They also they also monitor WeChat groups over in one is in Canada, one is in America, and a few others over in mainland China. So this is where we get our information. Now, the groups are very important, there's a lot of groups out there, right? There's tradie groups, there's all sorts of groups out there, groups on, there's even a group on, veggie growing tips, that I wanted Dusty to put me into, so as I can learn how to grow carrots, because my carrots keep on growing sideways, not vertical. So it's just one of those things, but it's very important as to the groups that you're involved with, or that you get invited to, and the groups that we mainly focus on for our podcasts other groups that here in Sydney, predominantly in Sydney, and they are, I would say, they're the strongest investor groups on WeChat, local investor groups, local Chinese investor groups on WeChat, and most of them, the numbers are full. So you know, and they are very avid. They're very strong investors. They're very, you know, individuals. There's certain criteria that you got to meet to be a part of some of these groups. As I mentioned before, in one of the groups, they had the main group that was being formed from one of the WeChat groups was to get 5 homes in 5 years. Five properties in 5 years, and those that couldn't make it in there couldn't show how they were going to do it, or couldn't show that they had enough financial backing to be able to do it. Then they formed a subgroup of getting 2 homes in 5 years, for us it's very important to monitor what goes on in these groups, because they are I guess a glimpse of the greater voice, the greater Chinese community voice. As I said, they are prolific investors, obviously, across the board, homes or properties, as well as the share market, as well as stocks, as well as, not that fond of crypto. But, and it's been interesting over the years, over the last 12 months in particular, watching them, how they've gravitated away from your traditional hospitality type investments or takeaway shop type investments to the strong focus in housing, which is what's kept a lot of our viewers and our followers up to date with the different changes in property pricing and what people are doing around Sydney.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because we've seen some significant changes of strategy over recent times, but you know, the most interesting now is basically looking for small older properties that you can turn into a project, right? And it's a really interesting move.
Well, look, it is. Obviously, there's a big hunger for this community to invest in, and this over the weekend, a lot of the chatter was gravitating around certain suburbs in Sydney, where they're looking at older homes, not only. As we've been talking about, and we've been bringing to our followers' attentions, the focus on all the bigger homes that they can convert into budget accommodation. You know, to convert a 4-bedroom home into a 7-8 bedroom home and lease out each room and break the rental ceiling of particular suburbs. But now the focus for the last weekend, over the weekend, has been a lot of chatter around buying in older suburbs where the LGAs are keen to small density developments, such as your dual occupancies, your duplexes, or even triplexes like you have under the Fairfield LGA, and under the Fairfield LGA you could also put together even 6 dwellings on small parcels of land. They're really looking at that. Because what they are now doing also is they're venturing into joint ventures or JV thing and putting together syndicates to buy land and then obviously then build. And now one of the things that they do when they put together these syndicates and before they buy the land, they start building, obviously the contract has a deed of petition attached to it, so that to minimise the GST if they don't sell, if they keep, or to minimise the capital gains tax or any other tax. So they're very smart at doing it. They obtain very good professional advice in those communities, and as I said, they are now looking for those sites, and we're going to start seeing some of the WeChat chatter groups. They'll make mistakes along the way when they go toe-to-toe with seasoned developers. But you know what? At the end of the day, they're saying most of the time they're going to be keeping these properties anyway, and they're looking at areas where some of your traditional Middle Eastern developers, your Lebanese or your local Aussie developers may not be necessarily looking into, because the value of the land is beyond them anyway. Their interest is gravitating towards ethnic groups that over time will create a particular boundaries. And when I say boundaries, like these invisible walls, but walls based around ethnicity, because there are certain ethnic groups that gravitate towards education is a very strong demand for them, and education and safety, right? And then obviously the wall that reinforces that is the price point that you got to have to get in. Now, in years gone by, I've shared and I've jested over in our Ant Smart, and as to there are certain types of people that can only buy in the likes of your Five Docks and your Haverfield. You've got to be a Calabrese or Siciliana or Mafiosa, or have $5 million in your back pocket to get into the suburbs. I've said those things in jest, and there are certain parts of the city. So this is what we're seeing. We're seeing this demographic now, this demographic polarization across Sydney, and it is a lot stronger. So in a way, it's almost the opposite of the opposite effect of what multiculturalism was really designed for, right? It was really designed and articulated put together to for everybody to assimilate, everybody to live together. But at the moment, what we have is I call them the shifting sands, and people are polarizing towards their ethnic communities or religious communities, and they're going to be form very big big groups and big hubs. And it's basically you either got to identify like those individuals or have a lot of money to get into those into certain areas. Now, in some areas it may have the opposite effect, but it's a wait and see. But overall, for me, it's an interesting dynamic that I've been watching for for over 20 years personally, just watching the your in years gone by, watching how different suburbs, your Lidcombes and your Guildfords and your Blacktowns, how those shifting sands moved from your earlier subdivisions in the 90s, to having your Aussie young home buyers, out in Kings Park and Kings Langley and all these areas, and then moving to a Filipino community base, and then from then going into more of a when the government's put a lot of the refugees, the African refugees there, and just watching the changes. And now we've got new changes as well, because there's new demand of the Indian communities and the different factions of the Indian communities around your Blacktown LGAs, as well as your other nationalities. For me, it's fascinating, but at the end of the day, it boils down to dollars and how much money, how keen people are prepared to go into those communities, and for what reason. That's going to determine price moving forward.
Yeah, and the concept of enclaves, where particular groups of people cluster together, is not necessarily new. But as you say, how Australian is that or not? When you think of the multicultural design of Australia, was to try and have everybody together, as it were. And so if you start creating these little dotted lines and then define particular areas with particular types of people, that is perhaps not necessarily helpful in the longer term. I guess the other question we should move on to is, well, if we assume that the migration is going to stay high, it's massive. Then what are the answers? Well, I guess there's a consequence, and of course, Leif Van Onsen has been very, very much leading the thought here about the problem with high migration is, and he was featured quite recently. And here's a quick update that basically says the rapid rate of rental disaster engulfing Australia obviously linked directly to high migration. And all my analysis also shows, Edwin, that it is actually the rental sector that are really being squashed. The supply of rental properties is continuing to degrade. The demand is continuing to go through the roof thanks to high migration. Net net of that is it's a complete disaster. And if we've been covering this for some time, I think more and more people now are beginning to understand that this is a big deal.
Look, and it's really, really sad. It really is sad that it's taken the mainstream, and it's taken a lot of property commentators and others, you know, aficionados to you know, politicians are still blindfolded with the whole thing because they've got vested interests. So, but look, it's only going to get worse. So we keep on saying it's going to get worse. The fix was in, as you reiterated in the beginning of the show, and we said the fix was in, and it was the WeChat chatterers that brought to our attention what happened with the pathways to permanent residency, the changes to the legislation around pathways to permanent residency back in 2019. And this is even before before the election. So that is why you and I called it back then, that regardless of who got into power, the fix was already in. And this is what people don't understand. And I still haven't heard a mainstream media property reporter from the AFR or Domain or any of these other or even the ABC for that matter, talk about what happened in 2019. We were alluded to the changes because of the WeChat chatters, the groups. They were talking about it because amongst the groups, as solicitors, migration officers, and migration specialist solicitors, they're working there, and they're akin to means and ways of bringing people from China and overseas, as well as looking ways and means and ways to bring bring money over. So this is the whole thing. But it's now got to a point, Martin, where it's hard to even say I told you so, because it's really only just going to get worse. Now we're talking about that they're starting to report on the elderly, wait until they start reporting on single parents and entire families with kids, dragging kids and their little friends around from car park to car park. But what's the solution? What is this? They talk about the 1.2 million homes, and as you and I shared on the last podcast, our maths, we're only up to about 152 or so. That we can pinpoint that have been built across all states so far, outside of the normal building that's undertaken by the private sector, but those that are that the governments are boasting about or the politicians are boasting about, it's still under 200, right? So, but what other solutions are there, Martin?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. And of course, there aren't many solutions if you keep the parameters. So migration has got to be the first one. But of course, then somebody's come up with another solution. And that, of course, is just turn up the volume on granny flats, right? There was a report last week from CoreLogy and a couple of other people who said, actually, there are 640,000 potential sites across Australia where you can plant granny flats. So that could be a potential solution to the problem. Not sure I agree with that, Edwin. What do you think?
And look, this is the thing. If you watch that TikTok post by Channel 9, by Nine News, it was interesting that the cost of these modular or prefabricated granny flats it's really just 40. From the looks of things, it's just 40-foot containers put together. But we're talking about going from 28 square meters, right, up to just under 60 square meters, 58 square meters or so, which is what most LGAs will allow you to put it on as a granny flat, we're talking about costs that they claim to be between $150,000 to $250,000 for these for these modular units. I mean, they look swanky, they look fancy, but dear Lord, $150,000 to $250,000 or $270,000, whatever the case may be, that's a hell of a lot of money, right? That's a lot of coin. I knew that granny flats went up, and as I shared a few weeks back with you. When we were organizing branded flats for our clients, 2018, 2017, 18, and thereabouts, they were, we were quoting, we were getting quotes from between 85 to 110,000 if you wanted bells and whistles and you wanted brick veneer, to now, quoting from 175 to 200, but they're more solid. They're a lot bigger. These modular units, I mean, look, at the end of the day, but it's an opportunity for business people, right? So the government's created huge problems. The alternative to going through or not getting council approval for a granny flat, so you might as well put in something that's what would you call it? It's not classified as a permanent residence like your granny flat would be. Therefore, you could be taken out at any given time. So there's the council's a little bit more lenient on that, but and they made them really swanky. But dear Lord, it's cost prohibitive. But on the other side of that coin, is it really cost prohibitive when there's such a great need out there? Good luck to the manufacturers. But I still think that Dan the Man, that was one of the reasons why he went to China, is because he's going to bring in container loads of prefabricated modular units from China. That's just what Dusty tells me, right? So I don't know whether that's true, but that's what Dusty tells me.
But thinking about, the prefabrication story has had a long history, right? And if you look back, for example, in the UK, after the war, there was a bunch of prefabricated houses developed and rolled out. And the idea was that they would be there for the short term and then would actually be replaced. But 20, 30 years later, they were still there, right? And of course, the quality of the prefabrication quite often means that they've got a very short life. And so you've got much higher maintenance costs down the track. They're perhaps less well insulated and all those things too. So there are some significant risks. They could also, if they're coming in from, say, China, they could have asbestos in them without anybody really bothering to check. And if you think about where the that report suggested was basically looking for properties where there was sufficient space in the plot to locate a granny flat, right? Or a kiddie flat, I suppose. So what it means is that effectively you are changing, again, the nature of those particular suburbs by putting all of these little places in as well. And, individuals may well benefit a little bit. The real beneficiaries are those people who are actually peddling the solutions of prefabrication and the various hangers-on. So, again, you can't take this as a completely objective analysis of how to solve the problem. It's more a business opportunity being dressed up as a piece of information.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? Like now we're going, because the modular, because the relocatable, you can put them in your front yard, and that's where we're going to see a lot more caravans in people's front yards. We're going to see a lot more containers in people's front yards. It's just watch this space, and you just got to, for our viewers, let us know where you start. You've already started to see, more caravans parked in people's front yards or in the driveways or in the backyards, and even 40-foot containers that are. I've started to see some of that. I posted some on Twitter when I went up the Central Coast to look at some properties, and one of the properties that I was looking at had a makeshift 20-foot container converted into a studio in the back, and it was really for an individual it beats sleeping in the car, right? Mm. But look, for me, the other interesting thing to this story, Martin, is the fact that. This came out, this report came out, or the Channel 9 news report comes out, right? And I don't know, call me a conspiracy theorist, Martin, but, isn't Albo going over to China very soon? And aren't we going to be giving them wine or something? Or is Albo on the Terps or something? And then we're going to do a contract with Xi Jinping. Albo gives them, so some of our vino, and we're going to get some more modular homes to solve the housing crisis. I don't know. I'm just my mind boggles.
What could you be suggesting, Edwin? What could you be suggesting? But no, it is an interesting point, isn't it? How the the China-Australian relationship is morphing currently, and it'd be interesting to see how it plays up. You made the point earlier on about people potentially being a little bit more coy about listing their properties, and what about the issue of rescinding contracts? Because that's something else that you've discussed this week as well.
Yeah, look, in line with the shortage of homes, in line with shortage of, and talking about these granny flats or kiddie flats, this new style of accommodation for the future. And earlier on, I mentioned and I said that, for 28 or so square meters, it costs you $150,000, and for right up to 58 or 50 to 60 square meters, it's something like $250,000. But when you compare it to the cost of a block of land in Queanbeyan, now I reached out to one of my friends for many years. She works for a legal firm in the city that's one of the biggest conveyancing firms in the city that takes care of big developers, and this was the chat that we had over the weekend. Basically, she's saying that there's a lot of buyers of parcels of land in Queanbeyan that have been rescinding contracts. So I thought the contracts that they were rescinding were, packages of home and land packages, and it's actual just the land contracts, because of they probably don't have a builder to build, hence the reason why things are it's easier for them to rescind than to keep going with the whole project. But this is the thing, Martin. So when you start looking at parcels of land from 300 to 500,000, and I'd imagine that'll only be blocks of land from 280 to 450 square meters. Am I being too critical in saying that these 150, $250,000 modular units that somebody's come up with, they're too expensive if they're just going to go into your grandma's backyard or your parents' backyard or your brother's backyard or one of your siblings' backyard? After all, it's just the cost of the actual unit itself. When you start looking at the values of land at $500,000 in Queanbeyan, for around for 420 square meters, and then you got to add to that the cost of construction, which is still running in some parts of New South Wales, is still running between $3,700 to $4,500 per square meter for something basic, which is so. Am I out with my numbers? I don't know, and I would say, on what I am seeing and a lot of this information, that there will be a big surge in the construction of granny flats, which you asked me a couple of months ago what I thought about them, and also from what we're seeing and what we've been talking about from the beginning of the year, we said that there was going to be a big push with one of the other followers on Twitter. That has a lot of dealings with China. He brought out the fact that there are talks, big boy talks with big manufacturers over there to bring these modular prefabricated units in 40-foot containers that you could basically slide panels out and whiz bang, thank you, ma'am. There you go. You've got a two bedroom granny flat for $120,000 on a backyard, and because it's modular, because it's not permanently affixed, you can move it around if there are any issues.
Yeah, and just to remind everybody that if you had another 640,000 units put into those land identified areas, the infrastructure demand in terms of power, sewerage, water would be another factor that's not been thought about at all. So it's a big big issue. And then, of course, the other factor is that, you know, as I mentioned earlier on, the quality of the construction might be a thing. But you know and I know that the quality of construction is a big deal with a lot of the high-rise stuff. And here was a classic example this week with more apartments being whacked with a huge deficit bill. And it wasn't just an ordinary building, this one.
Australia, builders constructing apartment complexes four stories and above aren't legally required to take out warranty insurance.
Meaning if the builder goes belly up, it's the owners who are left to foot the bill.
No, and this is where I've been very vocal since the early 2000s, from around about 2006, 2007. I've been very, very vocal about people being careful with what they buy and what they classify as being having homeowners warranty insurance across buildings. I mean, most of the population, unfortunately, are still under the belief that if there's a builder's license attached to a project, there's insurance, right? And when it comes to high-rise development, this particular developer in Melbourne, the Shangri-La Constructions, they've got one particular complex there. They've got a front up with $4.6 million dollars worth of defects, and it's right throughout the complex. Now, it's interesting if people watch the video in its full totality from a current affairs, and you may post a section of it. It's this belief, Martin, that people think, again, that anything that's built or the high rise has this longevity of insurance, or call it your 6 years, home warranty insurance, or the builders have taken it out. When in truth be told, they don't, because it's too costly. And this loophole that a current affair talk about, I mean, again, Martin, it baffles me, because it's been there for decades. And I've been very, very vocal about it since the early 2000s, as I said. And it basically, anything that's four levels or above just does not have, home warranty insurance. And this is a problem. It has been a problem in many buildings that were built, before. And they look like they're only three levels. And this is what people have got to be careful about, is how the powers to be deem what's three levels, what's four levels, when there are standing cases where developers and builders have won on this particular issue, where the basement is deemed to be one level. So although you may see the ground floor, second level, and third level, you're not counting the basement, when in actual fact the basement is another level, and this is where a lot of people get caught out. And the other thing that really has puzzled me over the years, or has always left a bad taste in my mind from my own industry, is how many real estate agents and marketing companies that market these projects, they themselves don't know what's going on, and they deceive. Willingly or ignorantly, deceive the general public in making them believe that just because it's new, it has all these builder's warranties in place, when in actual fact it doesn't. And even your structural issues, although the structural aspect of the building is covered for 6 years, however, that only takes effect if the owners corporation do special reports before the 2 year tenure. Get special engineering reports, and if they're not done properly by the strata company or the owners corporation instructing the strata company to do it, guess what? It voids that warranty as well. So there are many, it's a bit of a minefield, but it's not. And then the other thing that baffles me is the conveyances and the solicitors doing the conveyance, whether it be a conveyancer or a solicitor doing the conveyance. How they either, again, is it ignorance? Is it willfulness? Is it I don't really give a shit? I don't really care? Type of thing, because they don't advise the majority of them, not all of them, but most of them don't advise their clients of these as current affairs as loopholes.
No, it's very important, Edwin, and as you say, I think the legal profession do have a responsibility here. But on the other hand, you know, if you're going to a conveyancer and find somebody, you know, cheap to make the conveyancing, and if you take at gospel all the stuff that the real estate agent and the developer tells you, and, you know, don't do any further work and due diligence, then you are going to get caught out. And unfortunately, getting caught out here can be a very, very expensive business over time. And unfortunately, in my conversations with individuals, I'm getting more and more stories of people who bought an apartment and have now realized that what they've bought is something which is frankly just burning through their funds, because the costs of repairs, the costs of maintenance, the strata levies, all of that stuff going up and up and up, and the quality of the construction was never there in the first place. And as you say, they didn't actually have the protections they thought they had. And so you end up in a very, very difficult situation. Do you hang in there or do you try and sell? And of course, we know that a lot of investors are already selling some of these properties because it's just too hard. And then, of course, the question is, well, will the next purchaser do the due diligence and really understand and discover what's going on? So it's really, really important if you're buying not off the plan, but are buying an existing property, to understand the status of the entity that's in charge of the building, and particularly the strata committee or whatever you have there. What's its funding? What's its current balances? What's its plans? And again, my experience is a lot of conveyancers don't look at that at all.
Yeah, and as you say, Martin, so then when they resell, a thought came to mind, then the scammed become the scammers.
Yep, spot on, they do, absolutely. Yeah. Caveat emptor, you know, we won't mention anything, and then hopefully the next person doesn't actually, discover it until it's too late, and so these things can perpetuate.
So what you do, Martin, is when you interview the real estate agents that you want to get to sell the unit that you got scammed, right? Then this isn't legal advice, by the way, right? All professional advice, this is just Dusty whispering in my ear. So what you do is when you interview the agent, you ask them if they know about builder's warranty insurance, and you get the one that doesn't. No. So the scam become the new scammer. Right?
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you have to do your due diligence, as we keep saying. Now let's just move on a little bit, because we can also talk a little bit more about pricing. Low? Well, maybe. You know, there's a really big story here to be touched on as well.
Yeah. So last week we spoke about the story. There was a lot more. Yeah, reality versus bling is what we spoke about last week. So I thought I kept on chasing this week, chased the agent as to get some more information as to the continuation of how we played out, and basically how we played out at the end of the day, Martin, was that the buyers of that story that we spoke about last week, they bought the land, they bought the home, they paid $2,680,000 for the property, and they thought they got a deal, but after speaking with the agent that sold the property, it sold post auction. He tells me that the buyers bought just to stay in the property for 2 years, and then in 2 years they were going to demolish the property altogether and build their dream home. So I said to him, good luck, because they won't be able to build anything bigger or as big potentially as what is standing currently on that envelope of land right now, on that block of land right now, because of the flood issues and things that they will now have to do in order to mitigate the potential flood to the area. So basically, that's the scenario, and that was the continuation of reality versus bling story that we did that we did last week. And so I'm just baffled, and there's going to be a big issue in 2 years' time with whoever owns the next door, or the property next door that we also were looking at for our clients, which is number 30. It's going to be a big issue because whoever owns that is going to have a lot to say with what gets built next door because of the detention tanks that would have to be built, that would have to be built in place. So taking all that into consideration, this poor bastard got had more money than sense, has got no idea. And if they think, from what the agent told me, if they think, they believe that they're going to build this mansion of a home there after paying $2.68 million for a parcel of land in Homebush West, then to putting a $1.5 million monstrosity there, it's not going to happen. You know, they've got two chances, in my opinion. One's called Buckley's and the other one's called Nunn.
Yeah. And it goes back to if you're going to be thinking about doing some subsequent redevelopment, make sure you do your due diligence and understand what the limitations are. Because I've found, again, a number of people that I've spoken with over the years who've gone in with an assumption that, sure, they'll knock it down and put on, you know, something bigger and more grandiose. Then to discover that there are limits on how much of the property you can actually build over, limits on how high you can go up. And indeed, in one case, it was actually a property with some preservations on it. And those preservations weren't even discussed as part of the due diligence when they bought the place. So it just shows you, you know, you can get caught out left, right and center. And of course, the sticker number is just a little bit of the story, right? You've got to understand the context as well.
Yeah, that's right. So for our followers, yeah, go back to the last part, the last Monday's rant, and you'll get to see listen to the whole story, or go to my Twitter page, and you will be able to read the thread. It's a shame, but then you've got your natural disasters that also happen, around New South Wales, and have happened around New South Wales, and a lot of the homes that get taken out, and then in bushfires or any other disaster, natural disaster, and then the insurances pay out, or they're underinsured, and then they can't build what they were insured for because they didn't keep up to date with the insurance policies, and they've got the people have got no clue, no idea as to the cost of construction, and the new changes to local government planning. And you know, different bow ratings and all sorts of instruments that the local government's put over parcels of land that to build something similar or even smaller is going to cost you in a lot of cases twice as much as what the insurance companies paid out on, and hence the reason why a lot of people, if you recall from the 2017-2018 fires, they were never able to rebuild. They just sold the land and walked away. It's
sad. No, absolutely. Again, due diligence, you can't say enough. It's really important. Let's just briefly look at the numbers. And you know, the truth is, Edwin, that there's not really a lot going on with the numbers, right? We're still seeing the same weakness. So this was Sydney on the 16th of October, 17231, and then if we jump forward to the 23rd, 17344. So not a lot going on there, and it's as we expected, really. Not a lot of movement.
No, not a lot of movement. Look, I'm hoping that the worst case scenario stays. It plateaus on these numbers. I would hate to see, as I said, as more tensions happen overseas, now that the Chinese frigates are going to the Black Sea and all sorts of crap going on up there, that we don't enter into some sort of a skirmish or a war, and then people pull their listings from the market, and that's just going to create even more of a frenzy of prices going up, less properties on market. But it's still not a lot of choice. Victoria or Melbourne is still pretty much along the same lines. No major changes there. What's interesting though, Martin, is the auction numbers. We've really gone up. Now we're really into now we're really starting to see what's going to happen out there, and you know, what the appetite's going to be for people that are in buying. But as I keep on saying, from last week to from previous week's reports that we were getting from real estate agents and our rounds that we do around Sydney to the weekend, it was interesting how from very little numbers attending the open houses, we saw and we also saw at some of the opens where they were only expecting two or three groups, you know, they ended up with 17, 15, 16 groups, and something happened over the last couple of weeks where there's a lot more interest. I know in a lot of areas why, and we go back to the Wichita Chatterers, but also in many parts of the Blacktown LGA and heading north towards your Castle Hill areas, North Rocks, all those areas are up there. And your Carlingfords and that, you're also starting to get the Tigers are starting to have a big appetite to buy. So there's a lot playing out, but it's a matter of watch and see. Keep an eye on the numbers weekly, particularly in the areas that you're looking at buying. That's very critical, wait and see.
Absolutely, waiting and see is the right thing. And if we look at the rental sector, it's still pretty grave, isn't it? So if you look on the 16th, 8698, and if we jump forward to the 23rd, 8635. So slight drop again. You know, there's no movement other than down in the rental sector.
Yeah, this is a scary thing. How long is it going to be before we start? Hitting below 8,000. It was a rapid decline from 11,000, down to your low, low to mid eights. It's just I kind of think that there's going to be a rapid flow down of these numbers, closer to or just before Christmas, but it's madness. It is absolutely madness, and watching these week in, week out, and also seeing when we do open, when we go to open inspections or inspect homes for our clients, we're noticing where you would the interesting thing that we're noticing two sets of lounges or three sets of lounges couple of double bunks in bedrooms where Dusty and I chat on the side and think, there's not only one family living here, but there's two families. We're not talking about your budget accommodation type of homes, or we're talking about your in other areas, in your traditional rental area. So it's sad. It's sad. If there was a strong word, it's really heartbreaking to see this, Martin, but that's where we are, and unfortunately our illustrious leaders leaving 747 jets touring the world and in penthouses and don't even know what a liter of petrol costs, let alone having to go around into the grassroots levels and see how people are actually living, eating, and the pain that they're going through. They just seems like they just don't care, unfortunately.
No, I wonder about that myself. And if you look at the rental figures nationally, again, it's not a very good story. So 39,793 on the 16th. And if we then jump forward to the 23rd, 39,480. So again, very low numbers. And, I think you and I would both agree that with those low numbers nationally, this just highlights that we've got a major, major crisis.
Yes, and it was interesting to see the Louis Christopher Square Meter Research and a few other property commentators starting to take note of what I said 3 months ago. I said, watch this space, and we will see the people that the wave that piled into closer to the commercial areas in Sydney I said, watch this space, because it's only going to be a matter of time, a short period of time, before they start gravitating back towards the regions. And this is what Square Meter Research and Louis and a few other property commentators are now reporting, that their graphs and reports are saying. But you and I spoke about this, three months ago, because it was just a natural phenomenon, just like watching the wave coming into the shore, right, and then just pulling back, pulling back up because there's just not enough supply, and people are gonna start having to cope with your 1.2, 1.5, even 2 hour commute one way to get to work. Just as that can have, that's a sacrifice that many families are starting to make, and agents in the mountains are telling me when they're talking to the inquiry and to the people that come to their open homes, what they are. That's a general chatter around there, is that people are making that sacrifice, starting to make that sacrifice. So it's a watch this space with as the rental prices not only continue to rise in the commercial areas, but watch them go back up again in your regional hubs, such as your Central Coast, Gosfords, and your mountains region, and even over the mountains into your Lithgows and so forth, and also further down, further in the southwest regions.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a good look. Okay, finally, just before we go, tip of the week, and this is about home safety and home security.
Yeah, look, we have brought this up before, but I think with what's happening around there and the pressures that people are in, and one of the aspects that I've been talking to quite a number of my trades groups, and there's a huge demand for home security in terms of cameras around the properties, but also with regards to your front door screens and your windows. So, and it is very important, obviously, don't let your insurance lapse, your not so much your building insurance also as much as your don't let your building insurance lapse for sure, and make sure that's up to date, but also your house content insurance, because there's, with all these pressures, Martin, the unfortunate thing that happens in society is it starts to create and fester the bad side, which is your delinquencies and your drug abuse and all those aspects of society that these sort of demands that are put on the greater community, just some sort of a natural progression. It's a cause and effect of where we are. When people become desperate, they do all sorts of things. Apart from some will gravitate towards drugs, and then when they run out of money to buy the drugs, then they'll start breaking into homes, and others will just start breaking into homes just to get something so they can sell, so they can do. I mean, there's also, but it's not going to get any easier or any prettier. So consider your home safety and security is the tip for the week.
Yeah, very good advice, everyone, particularly now. And I think it's always been thus, but even there are more people desperate when desperation spreads, then unfortunately there are consequences. So thank you very much for those thoughts and for your work on the charts and things today. And we continue to grind forward. I guess we'll be back for another rant next week, and I'm sure there'll be more to talk about. But have a good week. And for everybody out there, keep well, keep safe, and look after you and yours. And our thoughts go out to all the conflicts around the world, and for those caught up in it, because it's a really, really uncomfortable time for many.
That's right, man. And I stand with you on that wholeheartedly. And look after yourself, and take care of Meteor and your sleepy friends there. I'm sure they're right next to you, keeping you company. Meteor and Luna, are they there? Are they snoring? Are they what are they up to?
They are there. Yeah. No, they are there. There you go. They did actually come to the surface briefly at one stage, and I had to mute my microphone because they were going obviously chasing rabbits. But there you go. That's they are there.
You take care of yourself and look after yourself, and looking forward to our chat next week.
Thanks. Take care, everyone. See you soon. Bye-bye.